Sibelius's Symphony No. 5. Join me, Andrew McGregor, as the BBC Proms continue this Wednesday evening at 7 o'clock here on BBC Radio 3.
Well, the time now is 1 o'clock. This is BBC Radio 3 on 90 to 93 FM, on digital radio and online. Time now for the news with Vaughan Savage.
Downing Street has ruled out plans to scrap free milk for young children, saying the Prime Minister doesn't like the idea. A health minister had been consulting on whether or not to abolish the scheme, which provides nurseries and childcarers with milk in England, Wales and Scotland at a cost of £50 million a year. The Department of Health has now agreed the scheme will remain. Heavy monsoon rain is continuing to fall in northwestern Pakistan, where floods have left millions of people without shelter, food or drinking water. Roads that were opened have been closed, and helicopters carrying aid have been grounded. Heavy rain is hampering efforts to help victims, and more rain is forecast. At least 120 people have been killed in landslides triggered by heavy rain in northwest China. Nearly 2,000 people are said to be missing in the remote, mainly Tibetan region of Gansu province after homes and roads were destroyed. Police in Bangladesh say they've arrested one of the most wanted murder suspects in Britain. Ayub Khan, who's 27, is wanted in connection with the murder of Amajit Singh and his nephew Rajinder Singh in 2003 in Romford in East London. Mr. Khan was arrested on Friday in the Bangladeshi capital Dhaka after a request from the Metropolitan Police. The family of the British medical worker Karen Wu has issued a statement saying she was an inspiration to everyone she met. She and nine colleagues were murdered in Afghanistan in what local officials say was an armed robbery. The Scottish Justice Secretary has welcomed what he called the thoughtful intervention of Scotland's Roman Catholic leader in the dispute over the early release of the Lockerbie bomber. Cardinal Keith O'Brien backed the Scottish government's decision to free Abdul Basit El-Megrahi on compassionate grounds, accusing America of having a culture of vengeance. The weather, it will be mainly dry with some warm sunshine developing. The best of the sunshine will be across southwest England and South Wales. Cloud will increase later across Northern Ireland and western Scotland. The BBC News and Weather at 2:30 past one.
With Vaughan Savage. I'm Jill Anderson. Good afternoon to you. At 2 o'clock this afternoon, Radio 3 Requests with Fiona Torkington. Then Choral Evensong is at 3, and we have an archive broadcast from 1989 from Canterbury Cathedral. And then at 4 o'clock, our first visit to the Proms today, a concert of choral music, music by Daniel Lesueur, Takemitsu, Stephen Montague and Poulenc, conducted by Stephen Jackson and Andrew Crowley. Our second visit to the Proms is at 7:30 this evening. The BBC Symphony Orchestra will be conducted by Andrew Davis. Music by Messiaen, Mozart, a piano concerto number 17, played by Louis Lorty. Parry's Elegy for Brahms and Brahms Symphony No. 4 in the second half. So two visits to the Proms at 4 o'clock and 7:30 this evening. But right now, today's early music show with Lucy Skeeping, and to start the programme, a celebrated Canadian pianist.
Thank you. pianist Glenn Gould performing an Allemande on an Italian ground by Orlando Gibbons in his own unique way. Gould was nothing if not unconventional. He shunned most of the standard romantic piano literature, often preferring to focus his energy on Baroque composers, Bach in particular. And yet, when he was asked once in an interview who was his favourite composer, he replied without any sense of irony that it was the English Jacobean early keyboard master Orlando Gibbons, whom he pronounced to be the equal of the likes of Beethoven and Webern. His music is of supreme beauty, he wrote. In fact, Gould wasn't alone in his admiration of Gibbons. The young New York composer Nico Muhly, best known perhaps for his work with Bjork, recently listed Gibbons as one of his favourite composers. And in our cathedrals here in England, anthems by Gibbons are still very much part of the repertoire in almost an unbroken tradition. And we're going to be hearing some beautiful examples later on in the programme from the choirs of Winchester Cathedral and Magdalen College, Oxford. And then there's the music that Gibbons wrote for viols, often quite astounding little pieces that continue to be an absolute staple of the consort repertoire, frequently heard on the concert platform, along with the likes of Purcell, Laws and William Byrd. So today's Early Music Show is entirely devoted to Gibbons and to exploring what we know about his life, which centred around the churches and royal courts of London and Westminster during the reign of James I. And we start with a genre that, in its compact simplicity, perhaps says more about Gibbons' style than all of them, the Fantasia for Viol Consort, a free-ranging invention packed with ideas, aural patterns, rhythmic contrasts and phrases that play off one another. The performers here are Phantasm, and as their director Lawrence Dreyfus put it, Gibbons' six-part Fantasias are little gems. Listening to them is like peering through a musical kaleidoscope.
Thank you.
Fantasia in six parts by the Jacobean composer Orlando Gibbons, performed by Phantasm. Like so many of the composers we feature on the Early Music Show, Orlando Gibbons came from a musical line. It was the family trade, if you like. His father, William, had been a town wait in Cambridge, in other words, one of the players employed by the local authority. And Orlando's brother was also in the business as master of the choristers at King's and then at Exeter Cathedral. When Orlando was born in 1583, Elizabeth I was still on the throne, and he soon joined his brother at King's as a boy singer. By the time James had taken over, there was evidence that Gibbons, now aged 20, had started work at the royal court, probably first as a sort of fill-in substitute musician. Back then they were known as gentlemen extraordinary. And a few years later, full-time as one of the two organists at the Chapel Royal. Seems to have been a calm and well-organised life. Gibbons married Elizabeth, the daughter of a yeoman of the vestry of the Chapel Royal, the girl next door, you could say, and they lived with their seven children within a small community of court musicians in Bridge Street, right beside the Houses of Parliament. The court of James I was generally more interested in musical diversity than that of his cousin Elizabeth. The royal household now comprised some 20 wind players, along with viols and violins. And, of course, those ultra-privileged specialist players who, at the king's command, provided private music for mealtimes, bedtimes, well, any time really. As royal organist, Gibbons would have had access to keyboard instruments of the very latest kind, and he wrote some 45 pieces for harpsichord, six of them appearing in a small volume catchily entitled Parthenia, or the Maidenhead of the First Music That Ever Was Printed for the Virginals. It was presented to the Princess Elizabeth as a wedding gift, and subsequently reprinted three times, which tells us not only how well thought of Gibbons was in the highest circles, but how popular his music must have been with the wider public too. Particular favourites were arrangements of popular ballad or dance tunes, like this piece, Gibbons' own series of clever, contrasting variations on the traditional tune The Woods So Wild. John Toll is the harpsichordist.
Thank you.
harpsichordist John Toll with The Woods So Wild, a traditional Tudor tune not only set by Gibbons, as we heard there, but by William Byrd, Dowland and many others. And we'll be hearing John performing another Gibbons harpsichord piece towards the end of the programme. Actually, the Jacobean world made much less of a division than we do today between so-called art music and popular music like that. In fact, wherever you were, in the streets, the taverns, marketplaces or country fairs, musical sounds of one sort or another were a constant presence. On feast days, the church bells would be ringing. Visiting dignitaries would be welcomed by raucous fanfares. The town crier would contribute as well in his booming voice, announcing perhaps a reward for a lost horse or even a lost person. And of course, it would be hard to avoid the rough ballad singers on every street corner as they bawled out the latest hit songs hot off the press. Then there were the cries of the street traders calling out their wares, and often pretty tuneful they were, so much so, in fact, that they provided inspiration for numerous composers, from Gibbons all the way to Lionel Bart in our own time. And what an amazing variety of things there were on offer. The text is straight off the street, and be warned, some of it can be quite earthy. In this consort song we hear, new muscles, hot coddling, sprats, then buy a rope, have ye any bellows to mend, buy a cover for a chamber pot. Sounds useful. And finally come the beggars with their outstretched palms. For the Lord's sake, pity the poor women who lie cold and comfortless on the bare boards. This is the Theatre of Voices with the Viol Consort Fretwork in Orlando Gibbons, The Cries of London.
Shop this rainy morning. king, sing unto me now, now, late, late, late.
Will you buy the brush in your hand this morning?
If your hens will not lay, your cock must obey, with three golden staves on London Bridge.
And so we make an end, and so we make an end,
and so we make
Cries of London by Orlando Gibbons, the Theatre of Music with the Viols of Fretwork. Part of Gibbons' job description at court was to compose anthems for the choir of the Chapel Royal, settings of the canticles for morning and evening prayers, psalms and pieces for special festivals, some for full choir and some, as we're going to hear in a moment, that alternated solos with short choral passages. And although this is religious music, I think there's the same vitality that we find in his consort music. This is the countertenor Robin Blaise with the choir of Winchester Cathedral and a setting of the biblical text. This is the Record of John.
Oh,
This is The Record of John, a sacred anthem by Orlando Gibbons, composed around 1611, possibly for performance at St John's College, Oxford. Countertenor Robin Blaise, Sarah Baldock, the organist, and the choir of Winchester Cathedral, directed by David Hill. Gibbons' high reputation at court continued through some quite eventful times. When Princess Elizabeth left England for Heidelberg after her marriage, he may well have been amongst her entourage. And on the unexpected death of young Henry, Prince of Wales, Gibbons joined the musical establishment of the new heir, the future Charles I. His name also appears in documents relating to the King's death as senior organist at the Chapel Royal and at Westminster Abbey. None of it perhaps the stuff of Hollywood biopics. In fact, it was a comparatively uneventful life, but professionally very successful indeed. So is there anything at all about Gibbons the man, about his character? Well, perhaps we can glean a little from the various portraits that exist, although none of them were actually executed during his lifetime. Most reliable may be the white marble bust in Canterbury Cathedral, commissioned by Gibbons' widow the year after his death. It shows a classic Jacobean gentleman with a good head of hair, a well-trimmed pointy beard, and a thickly starched ruff of the Shakespeare sort. How much it actually looks like Gibbons we can't know, because, as we'll hear later on, the composer died suddenly and unexpectedly, and there was no time to arrange a death mask before he was buried. There are just a few snippets, though, that might help us to picture him. One in particular concerning a Henry Eveseed, a yeoman of the guard. "Since which time," wrote someone in the Royal Record Book, "he hath misbehaved himself continually, being drunk. Upon St. Peter's Day last, the said Eveseed did violently and suddenly, without cause, run upon Mr. Gibbons, took him up and threw him on the ground, whereby he received such hurt he is not yet recovered of the same." Thankfully, Gibbons did brush himself off, as the old song goes, and within a year he'd published a book of madrigals and motets, apt for viols and voices, as he described them. One of the loveliest and most often performed today has got to be The Silver Swan, possibly written to mark the death of Prince Henry. But first, Our Dear Heart, the words by John Donne. "Ah, dear heart, why do you rise? The light that shines comes from your eyes. Oh, stay, or else my joys will die."
Thank you.
The Silver Swan, and before that, Our Dear Heart, both by Orlando Gibbons. Rachel Elliott, the singer with the viol consort Concordia. You're listening to The Early Music Show with me, Lucy Skeeping. In Jacobean times, the viol was one of the most popular instruments for domestic entertainment. Every young gentleman or lady would be taught to sing and play as part of their basic education. And with its cosy intimacy, consort playing like that was the perfect family activity. Whether viols ever accompanied church music, though, in a formal liturgical setting has been much speculated upon. But we do hear them in this next piece, along with the choir of Magdalen College, Oxford. Gibbons may have been master of just about all the compositional styles and forms of the time. But for many, it's his sacred music that's established him as one of the greatest composers of the 17th century. This is the Te Deum from the second service, the morning prayers. We praise thee, O God, we acknowledge thee to be the Lord. To thee, cherubim and seraphim continually cry, Holy, holy, holy.
Thank you.
Te Deum from the second service by Orlando Gibbons, the choir of Magdalen College, Oxford, with fretwork directed by Bill Ives. In 1623, Gibbons was appointed organist of Westminster Abbey, evidently something of a coup for the authorities, because one particular day when the Abbey was hosting an official visit by the French ambassador, it was proudly announced that the organ was touched by the best finger of the age, Mr. Orlando Gibbons. Sadly, his musical genius was to be cut drastically short. Just a couple of years later, James I died. A few months after that, the new king, Charles I, travelled to Dover to meet his wife Henrietta Maria, a girl of 15 who he'd already married by proxy, as was the royal custom. Gibbons was among this company, and when the procession stopped at Canterbury on Whit Sunday, he suddenly suffered a massive seizure and died. A contemporary report tells us more. He fell in most strong and sharp convulsions, which did wring his mouth up to his ears, and his eyes were distorted as though they would have been thrust out of his head. Then suddenly he lost both speech, sight and hearing, and so grew apoplectical and lost the whole motion of every part of his body and died. At first it was feared Gibbons may have had the plague and could possibly have affected the court. So the king ordered a post-mortem, but his body was found to be very clean, without any show or spot of contagious matter. He was buried in early June 1625. Pavan for the Earl of Salisbury, one of Orlando Gibbon's greatest keyboard pieces, performed by harpsichordist John Toll. Who can say what music might have been produced had Gibbons lived further into the 17th century, beyond his 42nd year? While it's generally agreed that William Byrd, some 40 years his senior, was England's answer to the Renaissance, so Gibbons' music looked forward to the early Baroque, and of course to that most famous of his successors at Westminster Abbey, Henry Purcell. Let's end today with another of Gibbons' fantasias for viol consort, a joyful opening, mixing duple and triple rhythms, which then surprises us with an extraordinary sequence of chords before slowing down for a few moments to what by contrast is almost unbearably sad. This feels not just like music of great interest and variety, but as if the viols are really telling you something, making a point in every possible way, insisting that you understand their language. And it's a language that speaks to us as clearly and as ravishingly today as it did nearly 400 years ago.
The six-part Fantasia No. 5 by Orlando Gibbons, played by Phantasm. Today's early music show was presented by Lucy Skeeping and produced by Chris Wines. There won't be a programme next Saturday, but on Sunday at 1 o'clock, Lucy will be back with a profile of two of the most important female composers of the 16th and 17th centuries, the Caccini sisters.
Ilham Al-Madfai, Iraq's cherished veteran singer and guitarist, comes to the BBC Proms. In this prom, Ilham Al-Matfai is joined by the brilliant up-and-coming oud player Khayyam Alami, the protégé of the 2010 Radio 3 World Roots Academy. I'm Lucy Duran. Join me for Ilham Al-Matfai and Khayyam Alami at the BBC Proms tomorrow night at 10 o'clock here on BBC Radio 3.
And we'll be going to the proms at 4 o'clock this afternoon for a programme of choral music with brass. Music by Daniel Lesueur, Takemitsu, Stephen Montague and Poulenc. That's at 4 o'clock. Before that, at 3, we've a 1989 archive broadcast of Choral Evensong, which came from Canterbury Cathedral. The organist and master of the choristers was Dr. Alan Wicks, and we'll be hearing music by Durufle, Tompkins, Ridout and Bach. That's in an hour's time at 3. But now it's time for Radio 3 Requests with Fiona Talkington.
Thanks very much and hello again. Torrance in summer? Well, in the hands of Elgar, that's fine. Elgar's part song, As Torrents in Summer, from his cantata King Olaf, set in words by Longfellow, and requested by Geraint Thomas from Crawley. Short, he says, beautiful to listen to and sublime to sing, especially if you're a tenor. Edwin Banks from Stretford in Manchester is on a mission to start a Waldteufel revival. His Skater's Waltz is played so often, says Edwin, but there are lots of others. And he goes on to say that he remembers them being played much more often in his childhood. Edwin, am I allowed to say that you're 81? I'm very glad to be able to draw on your musical memories. This waltz is simply entitled A Toi.